Cool beans. Yo, are we ready to get going?
Yeah.
Laura's hitting us with that hip lingo.
Well, you know, I'm a cool hip kid these days.
Yeah.
And I just keep getting cooler as I
age. Yeah.
That was a subtle hint that today is my birthday. Just saying.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, Laura.
Happy birthday.
More like roughly 4 weeks after your birthday.
True. Just about. All right. Hello and welcome to the Common Laundering Program. Just kidding. What? It's the Common Geeking Program, a book club or a common reading program.
That's a joke because she's doing laundry.
Because I'm doing laundry.
That was kind of a difficult one to pick up.
Yeah. It's a joke because she is passing money through a fake business to hide her criminal activities.
Yeah, this podcast is a fake business.
But really, though, each episode we select a topic that four people will discuss from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives. Joining me this episode are...
Hi, I'm Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer.
I prefer Chowder.
Okay,
Wait, can we have a versus episode about Taimul versus Chowder?
Oh my god.
About whichever you prefer.
Please, yes.
Chowder will be the judge, and other people.
Yep.
People, who prefers Taimul? Like, Austin calls him Taimul. Keenan doesn't even know how to pronounce Taimul. So.
I mean, I prefer Taimul.
I'm sorry, what?
I never even knew.
I'm sorry, hold
He's
up.
Tell me whichever you rewind. Prefer, but you have a preference?
No, all joking aside, I'm fine with people who know how to pronounce my name calling me Chowder. People who don't know how to pronounce my name, y'all better learn how to pronounce Taimul, all right?
Fucking Keenan going, Taimu.
Oh, God. All right, well, anyway.
Anyway, I'll be representing Batman, the Brave and the Bold.
That's where I'm going to insert the pat. Hi, I'm Jeff, and this week I'm going to be representing Kung Fury.
Nice. I'm nodding, which is really good for podcasts.
Hello, listeners.
Jesus Christ.
My name is Edward Ryan.
What the fuck?
And this week I'm going to be repping Army of Darkness.
All right. And I'm your host, Laura Kramer.
Woo.
And for this episode's topic, I have selected the movie Johnny Mnemonic, and the theme is cheese.
Cheese.
And by cheese, I don't mean the delicious dairy product that you can eat on literally anything. I mean, like, cheesy or bad movies.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, it took me way too long to figure that out.
So for some reason, I just assumed that cheese is, like, a very common thing to call bad movies.
It absolutely is.
Okay. Because then I wasn't sure.
For a hot second there, I was thinking about repping some Papa John's cheesy bread.
I mean, it wouldn't be bad. The stuff's pretty good.
I don't know. The secret ingredient is racism, so...
Well, that's fair. All right, cool. So let's jump right in and talk about the movie Johnny Mnemonic. So this was made in 1995. It is a Canadian-American cyberpunk action thriller directed by Robert Longo in his directorial debut.
And if you think that sounds quite as ridiculous as it does just by the genre listing, then you're probably right.
So, surprising people in this, but it is starring Keanu Reeves playing Keanu Reeves playing Johnny Mnemonic.
I'm pretty sure he was still playing Neo a little bit. Wait, when did The Matrix come out? It was before this,
after
right?
After this, right?
After this.
Wow, really?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Matrix was like early 2000s.
This is how it starts. Guys.
No, The Matrix is like 99. Isn't The Matrix 99?
Wait, is it 99?
99 is after 95, then.
It's 1999, yeah.
Huh.
So Keanu Reeves plays Johnny Mnemonic, who is a man with a cybernetic brain implant designed to store information to curry information to and from different people, which is what currying is.
I think I missed some stuff, but he's a flash drive. That I definitely understood.
Yes. Keanu Reeves is a flash drive.
Like a very low threshold flash drive, too.
Well, he had a doubler to double his capacity.
That's the thing, right, is that he's carrying more than his maximum capacity, and if it stays like that for too long, it'll fuck with his brain.
Yeah, they live in a dystopian future where there's this nerve attenuation syndrome where...
There's some acronym for it, right?
It's NAS, and it's something where, like, there's too much technology, and they get really sick, and they get these, like, black shakes, and they basically have, like, seizures.
And they die.
And in this world, it's a really lucrative but kind of black market job to be an information courier where you install the information into your brain such that you are a human flash drive and sell it.
Because the information... is too sensitive to be sent over the net.
Right.
Because if they send it over the net, it could be intercepted. But if they put it in your brain, it can't be intercepted.
Exactly. Because humans are very invulnerable.
Okay, so I get the couriers thing and the not sending it on the net thing. But instead of putting it in Johnny's brain, couldn't they just hand him a flash drive to put in his pocket? No, because if he gets caught, they can get the information out of his brain. So it's not like
that's what the code is for.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole issue of the movie is that he realizes that he's got too much information in his head and shit goes south with his dealer. So he's like, I got to get this information out of my head or I'm going to die. But it's password protected so that he can't make off with the information.
Yeah, but you can encrypt a flash drive.
Yeah, I know. I'm just jumping off of your very legitimate concern to explain the plot.
I mean, I would say that, like, human brains have a fuck ton of capacity, but...
But he only has, like, 120 gigabytes.
Yes, he has used a doubler to get to 160 gigabytes, but that's he's carrying 320.
That's too many.
It's too many gigabytes.
I can carry nearly 80 gigs of data in my head. 160 if I use a doubler. Trouble is, somebody's stuck in a lot more than that, and I don't know how to get it back out.
Guys, I just want to let you know that the flash drive was invented in 1999, so they did not conceive of this technology yet.
All right, never mind, I'm wrong.
This movie is literally the prequel to our whole lives. This is amazing. So one thing that drives the plot of the movie is that Johnny is doing this really dangerous doubling and taking too much capacity because he has given away his childhood memories to make more room for storage that he's currying. And there's a really expensive medical procedure that you can return those childhood memories to your brain and remove the storage. So his motivation is to get his childhood back. Which he got rid of voluntarily to hold additional information.
Because he needed the money, yeah.
He needed the money to have the procedure to get the memories back.
All right, we're not going to talk about that.
Okay, so that's the beginning of the movie.
Do you see the cyclical problem here?
Shit hits the fan. He's trying to get to Newark, but the Yakuza are like, fuck this shit. We need whatever information in his brain.
Oh, yeah. The Yakuza are after him.
Yeah, the Yakuza are after him. They're the most dangerous group of criminals to exist.
Oh.
It's a great movie. I'm getting confused just explaining it, and I'm literally looking at the Wikipedia. It's just so good.
What the fuck is going on?
But so the Yakuza is after him, and then also the pharmaceutical company is after him, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pharmacom. Yep. Led by Takahashi. So suffice it to say, Johnny has information. Multiple people want it. Everybody's after him.
Yeah.
And so he gets to Newark, which is a beautiful landscape of trash heaps and like a bridge that looks like the Golden Gate Bridge, but I guess is supposed to be the George Washington or something.
So just Newark in our time as well.
But like with more flaming vehicles, but yes.
Yes.
Pretty much. And so Johnny gets attacked and is kind of accidentally saved by
J-Bone.
This wonderful, wonderful man named J-Bone.
Basically Ice-T and like...
No, it's literally Ice-T.
It is actually Ice-T.
And all my favorite things in the whole movie were said by him.
He's beautiful.
It's Ice-T in a cyberpunk cosplay at an anime convention. That is J-Bone right there.
Yep.
So Ice-T walks up to Keanu Reeves, completely straight-faced, but also without any, like, emphasis on any of the words, goes, you gotta hack your own brain.
Isn't their first encounter because the assassin who's trying to kill Johnny accidentally kills J-Bone's, like...
His friend. Yeah, they're, like, looking out because it's over their territory, and the friend, like, drops a giant stone onto the ground, and so the assassin, like, turns around and shoots him. Johnny and J-Bone escape, and... go into the low-techs anti-establishment group area.
But so Ice-T's with the low-techs, and they go to the low-tech base.
Which is called Heaven, right?
It's called Heaven, yeah. I wonder what the illusions are there.
Yeah.
This is where we fight back.
J-Bone's like, you gotta meet Jones. He can help you. He's got, like, some Navy mind computer technology.
Where the Navy got him hooked up, he cuts through hard encryption like a knife cuts through butter.
And then they go to meet Jones, and Jones is a fucking...
Wait, you're so far ahead, though.
Dolphin. I'm sorry, I need to talk about this. Jones is a dolphin. He's like the master computer hacker or something, and he's going to help Keanu Reeves, and he's a dolphin.
And he's addicted to heroin.
He's a dolphin who's addicted to heroin, and Keanu Reeves walks into the room, and he looks at Ice-T, and he says, it's a fish, and dolphins aren't fish. They're mammals.
Jones. It's a fish.
So that is all true. Before they meet Jones...
The middle of the movie.
Yeah, the middle of the movie happens where there is a cybernetically enhanced bodyguard named Jane who like is trying to get a job with Johnny's guy, Ralphie. But Ralphie's like, no, like you have the shakes. And it turns out that she is infected with this disease, the nerve attenuation syndrome, which is due to an over-reliance on technology and is causing political strife.
Her name is not Jane. Her name is Molly.
No,
her name is Jane.
It's Jane.
What?
Yeah.
Not according to Wikipedia.
I'm also looking at Wikipedia, and it definitely says her name is Jane.
Johnny is rescued by Molly, a razor girl who has undergone extensive body modifications. Yeah, they mentioned Molly like 6 times. What other female characters are there in this movie?
None?
Exactly.
Her name is definitely Jane.
It's
Hold on.
It's definitely Jane.
I'm looking at plot summary. Oh, wait a minute. This is summarizing the book. There's a book?
Oh,
wait,
there's a book? I have so many questions.
What the fuck is going on?
Okay, so Molly slash Jane, in the movie it's Jane, helps Johnny escape from the Yakuza who are trying to literally chop his head off to take the information out because Pharmacon, it turns out, has a cure to nerve attenuation syndrome, which is what Johnny is carrying. And so the easiest way for them to get it is to chop his head off.
And they don't want anyone to have it, right? Because they're a big pharmaceutical company.
Because they're making so much money.
Which is like a commentary. It's nice and subtle.
Anyway, so Jane, Jesus, everyone's name starts with a J. I'm having a hard time. Jane and Johnny escape and go to Jane's friend Spider, who's a doctor who has some experience with this. And Spider is trying to help Johnny cure or take out the information, but he is killed before he can do it.
By this fucking crazy, like, murder priest man who was hired by the Yakuza, right?
Yeah, who is amazing.
He's pretty crazy.
Hold, sinner!
Who the fuck was that? You don't want to know.
But they kill him, but Spider's like, Johnny, you can't die. Like, you have to get this information out there. Like, think about how many hundreds of lives you're going to save. And Johnny's all like, I just want my childhood memories. And Spider's like, save the world. And then he dies.
Yeah.
And they go back to the Lotex heaven.
That's when they meet Jones for the first time. I skipped ahead earlier.
Yeah. This whole big fight breaks out.
Can
and
I
then-
cut in real quick?
Yeah.
I gotta talk about Ice-T as much as possible. So the Yakuza show up, stuff starts blowing up, there's gunfire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ice-T, he walks over to the other side of the room, looks out a window, and then says, literally like this, he goes, it's the Yakuza. Like, there's no, like, I don't know if his character was, like, lobotomized or something, but, like, he can't, he doesn't emote, and I know that Ice-T can emote. I've seen him in other works.
Yeah.
It's the Yakuza.
Like, just...
It's pretty good.
He's so good.
I mean, granted, everyone speaks weirdly, you know? Just, like, Keanu Reeves can't speak without emphasizing every other word. Like,
I know, right? I was, like, watching this entire movie, and it's, like, Keanu Reeves is either, like, putting on a William Shatner impression, or he's, like, trying to have the audio manifestation of that meme where SpongeBob does, like, the chicken dance, you know?
Oh, yes, you can have everything.
Come on.
Yeah. It's amazing. But in the middle of this fight, Takahashi, who originally was against Johnny and was trying to steal the information, realizes that this is not the life he wants to live, and in a dying gesture provides Johnny with the remainder of the password.
Isn't there also like this AI lady who like was the original owner of the pharmaceutical
company? She's the original founder of Pharmacon, who knows that the cure is in Johnny's brain and knows that it's the right thing to like it. It's fucking weird though.
When they're talking about the lady and how she started Pharmacon, right? They made a mention of the artificial intelligence laws of 2006.
2006. Amazing.
2006.
Okay, A, 2006, right?
God, why didn't we call it that?
And B, this movie came out in 1995. They're like, yeah, it's realistic that we'll have artificial intelligence laws in 10 years. Like, what the fuck?
11 years, Jeffrey, okay.
Sorry, 11 years.
Okay, no, but I want to get back to what you said real quick. So this is when Ice-T's like,
the only way left is to hack your own brain.
Yeah.
And then they're going to do it. They're going to hack Johnny's brain. And then the AI is just like, oh, I'll just give you the password. Don't worry about it, man. And it's just like, wait a minute, what's the point of this movie?
For the trippy sequence.
Yeah, who knows, man. There's like a couple scenes where they go through this virtual reality and like, it's just amazing. Johnny has the like fucking stupid keyboard hands and like a whole helmet thing and... It's just great.
I just like when they're starting up that system, there's a fucking dial-up tone, and then he puts on a virtual reality headset. Just like...
yeah, it's great. So anyway, Johnny unlocks his information. He's able to upload it to everyone. The data for the NAS cure is recovered, and Johnny discovers that he can remember his mom and his family. He's gotten his memories back from childhood. Although I don't know how that happened, because there's no procedure, but whatever. And then and at the very end, you see him recovering, and he, Jane, and the low-techs observe, this is from the Wikipedia page, as Johnny recovers from the process, he, Jane, and the low-techs observe the Pharmacon building on fire, a sign that the cure's transmission was successful. Because, duh, that's obviously what that means.
They just needed a blatant way to show it. They're like, the bad guys lose.
The bad guys
lose. You know,
lose.
It's kind of a subtle thing, so let's just set their building on fire. Like,
yeah, they died, and there was an AI, and Johnny succeeded in his quest, but we gotta really drive it home.
And so we should light the building on fire.
And then near the end, right, the murder priest shows back up, and then Jones, like, fucking shoots him with a laser beam or something and sets him on fire.
Oh, that's fucking right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And that's the movie.
Jones is the real hero of this story.
That's true.
Jones is the real hero, for sure. He also has a giant metal plate, like, drilled into the side of his head.
Yeah, he's a cybernetic dolphin.
It's amazing.
But, you know, because he's addicted to heroin. I didn't get this in the movie, but on the Wikipedia article, it says that apparently, although this is also from the book, so I don't remember if this is a thing in the movie or not, but the military had a plan with their, like, so the dolphins were supposed to, like, navigate and, like, disarm bombs and shit with their cybernetic enhancements, and the heroin, they purposefully addicted them to heroin to keep them like obedient and loyal so they would give them more heroin in payment for their schemes. Like, what the fuck kind of harebrained scheme is that?
Oh god.
That's crazy to me.
Oh god.
No, but here's the even crazier part about it, right? Like, why didn't they just give them like dolphin treats or something? No, like, oh no, we want them to be drug-addled soldiers.
True.
It makes perfect sense.
Also, if you're cybernetically implanting them, can't you just control their brains?
I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions here. Now that we had an opportunity to discuss some of the finer points of this fine movie, let's move on to the domains. And Chowder, you're up first.
Okay.
Apparently that's what I prefer. I didn't even know.
I guess so. So I'm representing Batman, The Brave and the Bold. It was a cartoon series that ran on Cartoon Network from 2008 to 2011. There we go. So it ran for 3 seasons. You know, it's Batman. He fights crime. But here's the deal. This isn't the dark and broody Batman. This series intentionally models itself after the Adam West TV show and the Silver Age comics. So it's very bright and campy and colorful. And it's funny and ridiculous. Like, it gives you wonderful things like Batman going to an alternate universe to save alternate universe Abraham Lincoln from Mecha John Wilkes Booth.
Wow, that is a whole lot going on at once.
Well, it's also got like an adventure of the week kind of thing, right? Yeah. Because the whole thing of the show is that he teams up like with a different other DC hero every episode,
right? Exactly. Some of them include Jaime Reyes, Plastic Man, Aquaman.
Nice.
Yeah, so other episodes that this show has given us include, there's a Mayhem of the Music Meister. It's a musical episode where Batman and Black Canary, Aquaman, and Green Arrow have to stop the Music Meister, who is controlling the entire world through just his hypnotic voice, and the music meister is played by Neil Patrick Harris. So,
oh my god, yes,
truth in television there.
That sounds amazing.
Yes, it is.
I like the episode where fucking Wonder Woman shows up, and like in the background is the music going, Wonder Woman.
You know, Batman and like Steve Trevor are like tied to a missile. You know, classic James Bond style.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
What kind of art style is it?
It's like a very blocky, cartoony 60s style look to it. You know, they intentionally like really want to invoke the 60s and the 70s with this version of Batman.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, and I chose this because it's not just cheesy, it's intentionally cheesy. Mm. It intentionally wants to harken back to a time when Batman wasn't, I am the knight, I am vengeance, my parents are dead. Granted, there are actually episodes where it gets a little more serious, but for the most part, it's an intentionally cheesy, intentionally fun time.
Nice.
There's also a bat divided. In this episode, he teams up with...
It's a great title.
He teams up with... God damn it, what's his name?
Batman?
Superman.
The Joker.
Wonder Woman.
The Riddler.
Dead Man.
Spawn.
Green Arrow.
Captain America.
Cheese Man.
Cheese Man.
Cheese Man.
The cheesiest of men.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny. Jones.
Jones. He teams up with Jones.
Does he team up with Jones? Jones is probably in the Aquaman episode, right?
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Firestorm, there we go.
No, Firestorm, right, yeah, he exists.
Yeah, he teams up with Firestorm, and in this episode, there's a point where Batman is split into three different Batmans. One is an overly aggressive Batman, one is a hyper-intelligent Batman, and one is slacker Batman. And there is this one moment where aggressive Batman is, like, scolding slacker Batman, who's, like, eating nachos. And then aggressive Batman yells at him,
Batman does not eat nachos!
Classic.
Are the nachos too cheesy?
Oh.
I don't think there was cheese on that nacho.
How can you have nachos without cheese?
That's just chips, Time War. Yeah.
Wow, that really got you good, didn't it?
That's just chips, Time War.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about Batman. Remind me of the good and the bad?
The brave and the bold.
Batman, the
brave
and the bold. The good and the good bad. And
the,
bad.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Jeff, would you like to tell us about Kung Fury?
Oh, I would fucking love to tell you about Kung Fury. For some context, right? Kung Fury is a half-hour length film that was released in 2015. It was this is important. It was crowdfunded by a Kickstarter because they put out this music video of like a David Hasselhoff song, and it was like really cheesy and really 80s. And this was like an advertisement to crowdfund their movie. This music video was so amazing that the target goal for the Kickstarter was $200,000 to make this movie, and it raised over three times that. It's like a purposefully bad movie. The entire aesthetic is just like purposely like super fucking crazy 80s nonsense.
Mm, I remember a lot of neon.
Yeah, so the main character of this movie is, I don't know if he actually has a name other than Kung Fury, but his name is Kung Fury, right? He's a cop, and he's hunting down all the bad guys. He's a super awesome, like, lone wolf cop. And then he, like, fucking destroys half of the city because he's fighting this giant robot, right? His chief is like, you gotta be kept in line, Kung Fury. You keep fucking up the city, so we're gonna give you a partner. Your partner is Triceracop, and it's just a cop with a Triceratops head. And Johnny's like, no, I work alone. And then it, like, goes to a flashback where did I say Johnny? Where Kung Fury had this partner, and they were hunting down this ninja, and then the ninja killed his partner, so he's like, no, I can't have another partner, you know, classic 80s cliche, I work alone. And then, surprise, the villain of the movie shows up out of time travel, Adolf Hitler, also known as the Kung Fuhrer.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, like, Hitler, like, shoots up the police precinct, not, like, by rolling up with a gun, but, like, firing his gun through the telephone.
Yeah, through the telephone, right? He calls the police precinct, and they answer the phone, and then, like, the chief answers the phone, and then he gets shot in the head through the telephone. So Kung Fury is like, no, I've got to avenge the police chief. Oh, I'm Kung Fury, I'm so, you know... 80s. Instead of just going and dealing with Hitler in the time that he currently is, he's like, okay, I gotta go back in time to deal with Adolf Hitler during fucking Germany, right? Or during World War II.
Yeah, back during Germany.
So he goes to his friend Hackerman, and Hackerman is like the super fucking like 80s nerdy hacker with like long greasy hair and a mustache, and he like
and a mullet.
Puts on this like fucking computer glove, right? And he hacks him back in time.
Wasn't he using a power glove?
Yeah, it was a power glove. Yeah,
yep.
He hacks him back in time, but it accidentally sends him too far, and then he like ends up in this place where there's like these Vikings riding dinosaurs. He asks one of the Vikings like, what time is it? And without any hesitation to this question at all, the Viking lady answers,
it's the Viking age.
And he explains his whole situation. She's like, yeah, okay, cool. We gotta do this. So she's like, hey, Thor, the god of thunder, come help out this dude, Kung Fury. And then Thor shows up, and then they... I think Thor is the one who sends them through time to the correct time period.
Yeah, he sends them forward to... Yeah. Like Nazi Germany.
So Kung Fury goes and he fights a bunch of Nazis.
He fights the heck out of those Nazis.
Yeah, it's a pretty ridiculous fight sequence. It lasts like fucking 5 minutes, and that's a lot considering the entire movie is only half an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
So that happens, and then he gets like shot by Hitler or something. He's like dead, and then fucking his cavalry shows up to help him, which is like Thor and Hackerman and Triceracop. Also, Triceracop, for some reason, very quick into this fight, it's apparent that the only thing that Triceratop is doing is shooting people in the balls. Like,
dude, Triceratops are legends, man.
Yeah. But anyway, so Hackerman hacks Kung Fury back to life. Not kidding. And they apparently defeat Hitler. So then they go back into the future and everything's a little bit changed because, like, you know, the time realm is a little bit different or whatever, right? And then Hitler shows up again and he's just like, oh shit, I got away at the last second. My bird time traveled me through time. He's got a giant metal eagle.
Duh.
And then he fights. I think actually it ends on a cliffhanger. I don't think that anything happens after that.
Yeah, I believe so.
Basically, the reason I chose it is if you got a sense from anything in that ridiculous-ass plot, is this movie is very, I guess cheesy is a word for it. I don't know. It's like purposely playing off of like straight-up ridiculous 80s movies. And while this Johnny Mnemonic is not a ridiculous 80s movie, it's a ridiculous 90s movie, it definitely has that same kind of aesthetic. So I just thought they paralleled very nicely. Although Johnny Mnemonic, I think, probably was meant to be serious, whereas Kung Fury is definitely purposefully ridiculous.
We'll dig into that.
Yeah, we will.
For sure. Eddie.
Hey, that's me.
Tell us about what you brought today.
I brought what year did this movie come out?
In a year, for sure.
It was one of the years.
Sometime after the death of Christ.
I brought the 1992 film Army of Darkness, starring Bruce Campbell and directed by Sam Raimi. So Army of Darkness is the third in a trilogy of films called The Evil Dead. There was The Evil Dead, and then there was Evil Dead 2, and then there was Army of Darkness. And you may notice something right off the bat is that the third movie doesn't include The Evil Dead in its title whatsoever. That's okay.
Man, you really like repping
thirds.
Yeah, trequels that break from the formula, don't you?
When did I do this before? I forget things as soon as we stop recording.
You repped Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. I forgot about that. That was a good episode.
It was a good
episode. It was, yeah.
Pause the podcast right now. Go watch Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and then come back.
Don't worry, we'll wait.
All right, thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed that movie. Quick backstory on Army of Darkness. The first film, Evil Dead, was made by Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, and some other people. And it was like a horror film where a bunch of teens go out to a cabin in the woods for vacation. And they find this book called The Necronomicon. They all die, and then their bodies come back possessed, except for Bruce Campbell, who has to like kill all of his friends who are now possessed zombies. Movie was really good, but there were some parts of it that were wholly ridiculous, and people loved those parts. So when they made the second one, they were still making like a horror movie, but they kind of embraced the ridiculous stuff a little bit more. So in the second movie, he loses his hand and he gets a chainsaw hand.
Nice.
And so it gets a little bit more ridiculous, a little bit more campy. And then the third one, they go full tilt into the ridiculous. And that's Army of Darkness. What happens is, I don't remember exactly how, something with the Necronomicon, but he gets transported back in time to the Middle Ages.
Nice.
Oh, okay, naturally.
Bruce Campbell's character does. His name's Ash. So, found a piece of tortilla chip. I'm sorry, a piece of nacho in my teeth.
Eddie did not eat nacho.
So he gets transported back in time to the Middle Ages. Him and his car. He's in his car when he gets transported back in time.
Right.
Good. Yes.
Yeah.
And he gets captured by this like army
of darkness.
And they put him in a pit and have him fight one of the Deadites.
The Deadites existed back then too?
Yep.
So why weren't they not a problem in the present?
Right.
Because the movie, okay? Just listen. Okay. So he kills the Deadite and shows that he's awesome. And they're like, oh shit, never mind. You're awesome. You're free. You're not a slave anymore. So then he talks to this wise man who's like a wizard, basically. And he's like, we got to stop the Deadites. And I got to get back. I'm from the future. I got to get back to my own time. The wise man's like, we can send you back to your own time, but to do that, you know, we got to stop the Deadites and get the Necronomicon. So the wise man tells him, like, where the Necronomicon is, and he tells him these magic words that he has to say before he can pick up the Necronomicon. And if he doesn't say these magic words before he picks it up, then, like, all its evil powers are going to be able to come out. And the magic words are Klaatu Barada Nikto, something like that. Let me look up exactly. That's it. I remembered it correctly. So then Ash goes and he finds the Necronomicon and he's like, all right, I just got to say the magic words and I got to pick up the book, right? But he's kind of dumb. So he's like, Klaatu Barada, and then he picks the book up. And he's like, all right, I guess nothing evil happened. I did it. I saved the day. And then he goes back. But what happens? What do you think happens?
Nothing good.
All the evil shit happens. All the dead people that ever died, they dig themselves up out of the graves. Now there's this huge army of darkness. So Bruce Campbell gets back and he's like, don't worry, guys, I saved the day. But then they all notice that the army of darkness is marching upon them and they know that he didn't save the day. And the wise man's like, you're an idiot. At this point, they've brought his car inside the fortress and they're all confused by it.
Because it's a car.
Before the first movie, they were all like high school or college students or something. And he's got some textbooks in the trunk of his car. And he uses those textbooks and he reads them and he learns how to do stuff. So he figures out how to like make gasoline for the car.
What? Really? Yeah. Out of a textbook? What the hell textbook was that from?
I don't know. Maybe he was an engineering student. I don't know. And he basically turns his car into like this roving death machine tank. He figures out how to make bullets for his shotgun.
Jesus Christ. It's the power of knowledge, guys.
And he gets his chainsaw working.
Man, wish they taught me that in school.
And they defeat the Army of Darkness, which is why it wasn't a problem in the future, Jeffrey.
Okay.
And then the wise man's like, oh, thank you so much, Bruce Campbell. He doesn't call him Bruce Campbell.
What if he did, though?
That'd be crazy.
It'd be pretty good.
Do you think anyone would notice?
No. At this point in the series, nobody would. He tells him how to get back to his own time. He's like, here's this magic potion. You just gotta say these magic words and take the potion, and then you'll go back to your own time, and everything will be good. And then Bruce Campbell, he can't remember the magic words, so he says them wrong, and he drinks the potion, and he goes back to his own time, and he's like, oh, I guess everything's fine.
Oh, no.
Nothing's wrong. Everything's perfectly chill. So he goes back to his job at the supermarket.
God damn it.
And he's telling this coworker the story of his adventures and how cool he is. And then what happens? A Deadite shows up and attacks them, and he shoots it, and then he's like, I'm really cool. I'm Bruce Campbell. And then the movie ends.
Oh, man.
But I picked Army of Darkness because, first of all, it's super cheesy. Especially a lot of the lines and stuff that Bruce Campbell says. And the whole premise. and I just thought it would be an interesting thing to juxtapose with some of the other stuff that was picked. Because it was something that started as more of like a serious endeavor.
Mm.
And then as the franchise went on, they kind of embraced this like cheesiness.
They're just like, ah, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
Because sometimes people love cheese.
That is true.
I definitely love cheese.
I love cheese.
Yeah. Enjoy myself a good grilled cheese sandwich.
I, in fact, made tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches for dinner tonight.
Wow. I had some nachos.
You mean chips?
But I didn't put any cheese on them.
Fantastic. So thank you guys so much for bringing some interesting domains. I've actually only ever seen Kung Fury, so it was nice to hear about some of the other stuff.
You're welcome.
Hem hem. All right. I think it is time to move into the discussion. I think that we have much to talk about, but I'd like to start with a point that Jeff made at the beginning, and maybe this is a good ending question, but we're going to start with it anyway. Do you think that Johnny Mnemonic is intentionally terrible?
No.
Okay, see, here's the thing. I don't know if terrible, like cheesy, maybe.
Okay, super cheesy, yeah.
Up until Jones, my answer would definitively be no. But once Jones gets introduced, maybe. Because, like, there's no way that someone was writing that shit down and be like, yeah, yes, dolphins who are cybernetic enhancements controlled by heroin and was not thinking, this shit's fucking ridiculous, right? Oh, by the way, I guess we should mention, I looked it up. The heroin thing that I saw in the Wikipedia article was just a thing in the book.
Oh, just the book? Okay.
Yeah, it was a deleted scene in the movie, but it did not make it into the version we watched.
Makes sense. I mean, he kind of looked like he was on heroin.
He's a fucking dolphin. Like, what do you... He's a dolphin with cybernetic enhancements. Where were the signs, Laura? Like, where were the signs that couldn't be explained by being a dolphin with cybernetic enhancements?
Well, here's the thing you gotta know, Jeffrey. Laura is deeply prejudiced against dolphins.
Maybe.
And she thinks they're all criminals and drug addicts.
It's true, though.
It's just trying to sell some skooma.
Some skooma?
Actually, fun fact about dolphins, they actually kill blowfishes so that they can inhale them and get a high.
See?
Really?
Based in fact.
Laura, stop it.
We don't need to be fueling Laura's fucking dolphin prejudice, okay?
Hashtag not all dolphins.
Anyway, the answer to your question I would give you is, like, I was definitely thinking that it was a serious movie that was just cheesy and bad until Jones was introduced, the cybernetic dolphin. Also, the murder priest, like...
The murder priest was so much.
It seems like they must have been added in there as purposefully ridiculous things, so I don't know, but...
Here's the kicker for me, is that it's based on a book.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the book, so I don't know the tone of it. Like, if the book is...
Right.
...purposely ridiculous, then I would have to assume that the movie is in turn, but it's possible, because those elements that are ridiculous on screen, like the priest hitman and the cybernetically enhanced dolphin, I could definitely see how they're less ridiculous in a book where you can provide a lot more context and nuance. Where, like, the priest hitman thing, even it's super ridiculous in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that ridiculous of a concept because it's okay, he's a hitman and a priest is like a really good disguise.
I don't think that the priest thing was a disguise, though. I think that he was
actually a priest.
Yeah. Like, all of his murders were like, oh, I'm going to fucking purify you for God and shit like that. He definitely thought that his hitman thing was like a holy mission.
Behold your savior!
But coming from a book, that could still be a serious plot device.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And then with, like, Jones, it's like the CIA did a lot of weird experiments with, like, MK Ultra and stuff. Basically what I'm saying is I'm not gonna, but maybe reading the book would change my mind. But at the moment, I'm pretty sure that they were trying to make, like, a good movie.
I'm gonna say they were actually trying to make something serious here, and a lot of the silliness is just a result of, like, time moving forward, because fashion in the 90s really was just...
I nodded at that.
Fashion in the 90s and the 80s were very ridiculous, so of course, like, people would be dressed in very ridiculous ways, because that was how the 80s and 90s saw the future.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, like...
It's the Yakuza.
I mean, the casting is definitely questionable.
The Yakuza is also a good example, because back in the 80s, like, the rise of the Japanese economy, like, had all the white people in America, like, panicking.
Yeah, the Yakuza was a villain in a bunch of things back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the question, I guess, with Air would be, is that a commentary on the current experience, or are they just trying to do, like, a well-known villain?
I mean... Yeah, I think that that's one of the things that, like, Kung Fury is kind of riffing off of, is that in a lot of, like, 80s and 90s-ish movies, they made, like, some big ridiculous thing be the villain, and that's why Hitler is the fucking villain in Kung Fury, because it's just like a, oh yeah, like, everything in the 80s, like, Hitler or the Yakuza or, you know, the Russians were, like, the villain, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, like, playing off of, like, oh yes, the obvious world evil, this is not propaganda, what?
Well, I mean, Hitler definitely is a bad guy. Like, anti-Hitler propaganda is probably okay, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but just because it's true doesn't mean it wasn't propaganda.
Also doesn't mean that he's the only villain that can move a plot forward.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but he's the only villain that can be called the Kung Fuhrer.
That is true.
Yes.
I was thinking when I was watching Johnny Mnemonic, though, to Chowder's point, like, a lot of the visuals were so ridiculous, but that may not have been the case in 1995. Like, it's hard for me to think.
Yeah, he's totally right, though. Like, a lot of the things that we're looking at and we're like, oh, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, 320 gigabytes is a ridiculous amount of storage. But back then, it totally was a ridiculous amount of storage. And, like, I was saying it's ridiculous that the VR thing starts with a dial-up tone, but, like...
What else would it have started with?
That's how they understood the internet back then, you know?
Naturally, they could have thought about that and be like, yeah, we're probably going to get past that technology. And I also made a note about how all of the phones had cords and shit like that.
The phones having cords thing is weird because, like, cordless phones had been invented at that point.
Yeah, but they weren't commonplace.
No, but they existed. And this is a future movie.
But they existed enough to the point where you could logically predict that by the future that cords would be a thing of the past.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Well, maybe it was a budgetary issue, too, then. Like, maybe they couldn't afford all
But it's a prop, Laura. Like, they don't need the cords for the prop. Okay? Like, it's not a real functioning phone.
Listen, those wireless props are so expensive, you don't even know.
Like, they had a fucking dolphin. I don't think that a budget was the issue.
Do you guys think that they actually cybernetically enhanced a dolphin and got addicted to heroin?
I mean, of course. You gotta be legit here.
Was Jones a real dolphin in that movie, or was it a...
It's probably not a real dolphin, since it had cybernetic enhancements.
Yeah.
Okay. I know they didn't cybernetically enhance it.
No, I mean, like, you think they're gonna put that costume on a dolphin and the dolphin's gonna be okay with it? It's hard to put a dog in a movie, Jeffrey.
Anyway, that wasn't really my point. But I think, yeah, some of the visuals, I think, may not have seemed that bad back then. But watching it now, it's absolutely insane. Like, the visualization of the virtual reality, too.
A lot of the cheesiness, like, with the whole virtual reality thing, is going off of, like, a lot of things that movies of that era had, where it was, like, it was partially to service the plot, but it was also partially to be like, hey, look at this new technology that we can now use in movies. Because we've advanced technologically, so let's fucking put it in every movie that we have that has a sci-fi plot, you know what I mean?
Right.
Look at all the CGI.
And yay, there was a black sheep named Steven Spielberg who said, nay, what if we use CGI minimally?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what makes a lot of 80s and 90s movies cheesy, is that the directors are just having a fucking field day with the new technology.
Right.
But cybernetic dolphins, I think, still a ridiculous concept for the 90s. Or can we say that?
It was a ridiculous concept for a ridiculous era.
It's a ridiculous concept, but that doesn't mean that the movie was trying to be ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
The reason that cybernetic dolphin seems so ridiculous is because the rest of the movie doesn't plausibly feel like something that a cybernetic dolphin could exist in.
Right.
Like, they could have made a film in which we went, yeah, cybernetic dolphin.
Yeah, like, to bring this to Batman, the Brave and the Bold.
Oh, okay.
There's all sorts of ridiculous shit in there, like a detective chimp, Crypto the Superdog.
Yeah.
And those things feel like they fit because the ridiculous nature of the series itself And also just the nature of how superhero stuff mashes together so many different genres. A detective chimp and a superpowered dog feel like plausible things in that world. So like,
but they do put that in there to make it campier and more ridiculous, though. Like in the case of Batman Brave and the Bold, that's certainly a purposefully campy and cheesy show.
Right.
Yeah, although they are actual comic book characters, so.
Yeah, that leads me actually to my second question. My second question. And I'm going to ask in order. So we're going to do Chowder, Jeff, and Eddie. Chowder, would you say that your domain is a piece of quality media?
Definitely. It has a goal it wants to set out, and it accomplishes that goal. It's well animated, well written. It's legitimately funny, you know, good joke writing and all that. And yeah, it's cheesy, it's campy, and it set out to do that, and it accomplished doing that. So yes, it's a good piece of media.
Nice. Yeah. Jeff, same question?
Yeah, I mean, I assume that the point of this question is like, we're saying that something like Johnny Mnemonic is, while enjoyable, not quality, correct?
Right, yes.
Kung Fury, I would say, yes, absolutely is quality media because it's playing off of the aesthetic of films like Johnny Mnemonic. It's purposefully putting on that non-quality aesthetic,
right.
But that is its goal and it absolutely accomplishes that.
Cool. Eddie?
Hey, I'm Eddie.
Army of Darkness, quality piece?
I think Army of Darkness is a high quality piece of media.
Okay.
Do you think the rest of Evil Dead is?
The rest of Evil Dead is also a high quality piece of media. And I think just because something's cheesy doesn't mean that it's bad, you know?
Right.
And so, like, with Army of Darkness, like, the acting's great, the directing's great. You know, I've watched a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and, like, a lot of the, like, techniques that they employed and some techniques that they had to invent to make a lot of the scenes with, like, the Army of Darkness and all this stuff are, like, really fascinating. Like, they put a lot into the film. Like, they were trying to make something cool.
Right.
They knew that they weren't making something serious, but they definitely were trying to, and I say succeeded, in making something good.
Nice. I can't necessarily ask myself a question, but...
Yeah, you can.
No, go ahead.
Do I think that Johnny Mnemonic is a quality film? No, I don't. Because I think, per our earlier discussion, a lot of it, I'm genuinely not sure what their intention was. And therefore, I have to assume that they were trying to do something good and they just missed the mark so badly on...
Well, it does have, like, some political messages and things in it too. It's just like delivered in an absolutely absurd way.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a worthless piece.
Yeah, you know, but I'm saying that sticks to the point of, oh, it was probably meant to be serious, you know.
Yeah, but I just don't think
Yakuza.
Like the other ones, like the, you know, the visuals I can't judge in this era because I don't know what it looked like then. I don't know what the comparison is.
Laura, can I just tell you a quick piece of information? This movie came out in 95, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So for a visual comparison, Jurassic Park came out in 1993.
So like, not doing so hot.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair.
Also, like, I would say that the effects are worse than, like, Star Wars, too, which came out even earlier.
Yeah, true, actually. Like, they dropped a car off of the edge of a bridge and it exploded, and, like, even that was pretty bad. And it looked like a pretty real practical effect. Like, so, that's impressive.
Like, they just did a bad job filming it.
They're like, well, shit, we only had one car. Like.
But it's not particularly well acted. I mean, I love Keanu Reeves. I actually genuinely do. But he's not super great in this film.
He's a good actor, but this was not his greatest role.
Yeah.
So I don't think about it much. Okay.
The thing is, though, with this movie, if like they had succeeded in some of the stuff they set out to do, I don't know that I would have enjoyed the film. Like the fact
Absolutely.
That it's so bad is why I liked it.
Same.
Yeah, in,
same.
In some cases, mediocrity is worse than actually being bad because at least with being bad, you tried something, you know?
Yeah.
One comment I have about cheesy media in general is that if you make something cheesy, I think it should have some respect because, like, making anything is difficult.
Mm.
And you put possibly, like, years of your life into making it. And when you, pour all that hard work into something, the last thing some people want is for people to point at it and mock it. So I think it takes a kind of confidence to, like, go through with something cheesy.
Yeah. Yeah,
but if you're unintentionally making it cheesy, then you might just be bad. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
No, I get what Time Will is saying. I think, is that he's saying, like, you have to, like, be confident in what you're doing to make it all the way through that process of making a bad movie like Johnny Mnemonic and be like, yeah, let's release this.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why we come to be so attracted to those kinds of movies, because...
Because it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That happened.
Yeah.
It's just like, what were they thinking when they released it? But it's just like, they're not from a different fucking realm or plane or anything. Like, they must know when they're releasing this shit that it's at least a little bit ridiculous. Like, even if they made something like Johnny Mnemonic, right, with, like, the total intent to make it totally serious, once they got the finished product and saw how all the acting turned out and saw the fucking, like, murder priest do his thing, you have to be like, okay, this is what it is, right? Yeah. Like, you have like, to know at least a little bit.
We're out of budget. Yeah. This movie's coming out. Like,
we spent all the budget on the wireless phones. I mean, it was a really big problem.
They spent so much budget that they couldn't even afford cheese for the nachos.
True. I think that we touched on the point that, like, cheesy movies are just really fun, whether or not they were fully intended to be cheesy, whether they were an accidental cheese. Sometimes, because they were trying to be so serious, cheesy movies are really great. And I think that they're just a really entertaining piece of media that you can watch and get a lot of enjoyment from.
Yeah, and that is the correct conclusion. Colin be damned.
Colin be damned, indeed. Thank you so much for that discussion. I had fun. I don't know about you guys, but I'm about to find out.
Oh, I had a blast.
Oh, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, nice.
Great topic, Laura.
Well, thank you. I'm going to ask you to get a little bit more into detail about that by asking you to, in fact, rate the topic.
Oh, shit. That segue. Whoa,
that was a great segue.
Thank you. I've been working on my segues by listening to too many podcasts in a day. So I am going to have you guys rate today Johnny Mnemonic from a scale from 1 to 5 Ralphies. For those of you,
come on, Ralphie. Don't fuck with me.
One
Ralphie.
Of the things about the acting in this movie is that Ralphie is Johnny Mnemonic's dealer, essentially. And I swear to God, there was a 5-minute scene where they were talking, and fucking Johnny Mnemonic could not stop saying Ralphie, like, in every sentence, sometimes twice.
Every time he talks to Ralphie, every single sentence has to have Ralphie somewhere.
He has to say Ralphie.
Yeah.
Pick it up, Ralphie. How about it, Ralphie?
All right. So I'd like you to rate Johnny Mnemonic on a scale from 1 to 5 Ralphies. And we're going to continue our order. So Taimul, would you please go first?
Oh, shit. She called him Taimul.
I did. I called you Chowder twice, and I figured it's time for me to use your real name.
It's Taimul for it's you Taimul to use his real use name.
Okay, so technically it's a bad film, but like I want to rate it highly simply because of what a good time it was. But
to be very specific, I would like you to rate your enjoyment of Johnny Mnemonic.
Gotcha.
So on a scale from 1 to 5 Ralphies, how much did you enjoy watching Johnny Mnemonic?
Okay, on a scale of 1 to 5 Ralphies, about how much I enjoyed it, 4 Ralphies.
Nice.
Because it's absolutely hilarious seeing all the dated technology and seeing Keanu Reeves emphasize every other word he speaks.
Ralph.
It's great to see Ice-T just come down, dressed like a cyberpunk cosplay at an anime convention.
His hair was so good.
And it's great to see a cybernetically enhanced heroin-addicted dolphin.
He wasn't heroin-addicted in the movie.
Well, it was. We just didn't get told about it.
We just weren't told about it. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Chowder. Jeff, your enjoyment, 1 to 5, please.
I would have to agree with Chowder on that. I would also give Johnny Mnemonic a 4.
Nice.
I just want listeners to know that this movie is already rated higher than Colin's Pride and Joy Sonic the Hedgehog.
No matter what I give it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Johnny Mnemonic and Knuckles.
Johnny Mnemonic. Better than Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean, Chowder fucking nailed it right there. Like, this movie is so fucking outrageous. I was sold by Keanu Reeves' fucking terrible acting the minute the movie started.
Come on, Ralphie.
Like, it's just over the top and ridiculous. He acts like the entire plot of the film is just an inconvenience that is dropped on him, as if he's not the one who fucking gave up his memory to go carry around this fucking flash drive information.
Oh,
like, you knew what you're signing up for, Keanu, okay?
What the fuck is going on?
And also, yeah, Jones and fucking J-Bone and, oh my god. Also, fucking priest murderer hitman guy. Holy shit, yeah. Was that enjoyable. Yeah. It was, oh my god. Okay, I had such a good time with this movie.
Nice.
And that was worth a 4 out of 5 Ralphies in my book.
Love it. Thank you. Eddie?
Well, I gotta say, Ralphie. 4 out of 5 Ralphies.
Nice. I will take 3 4 out of 5 Ralphies for this film.
You picked the right audience for this, I think.
They basically said it all. I just gotta mention one more time, Ice-T, his delivery of every line is perfect.
It really is.
Because he's just completely flat with all of it.
It's like they told him he was doing the movie like 5 minutes before they started filming and just handed him the script.
And he was just reading it off of the script for the first time.
He was just reading off a teleprompter in the background.
Yeah. What? Here's the thing I didn't get into before, though, is that, like, his face isn't. Like, his voice is, like, flat with every delivery, but his face is acting. It's super weird. Like, I can't fathom how he could do that. When he's like, it's the Yakuza, his face is like, oh no, it's the Yakuza, guys. But besides that, I don't have anything to bring up that they didn't already. So yeah, 4 out of 5 Ralphies. You know, if we were rating like the quality, it'd be like none Ralphies, but...
Yeah, the quality, like, maybe 2, but...
Yeah, okay, probably not
2 would
nine,
be generous,
but it might still beat Sonic, but...
I would probably bump it up a rating just so it's 1 point ahead of Sonic. Just to spite Colin.
Alright, anyway, that is not the point of this episode. But what is the point of this episode right now is for me to hand out the Gold Star Student Award, which will be a challenge this week because I think that this was a super fun episode and I think that you all brought really good points and discussion. And I know, especially because one of you is going to get a prize that the rest will be jealous of. So, the Gold Star Student Award this week will be... The Golden Jones.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was almost a T-Bone? Why can't I remember his name? J-Bone.
J-Bone.
Because T-Bone makes sense and J-Bone doesn't.
J-Bone.
J-Bone? What the fuck?
No, it's like a T-Bone, but it just like curves a little bit at the bottom. It's a J-Bone steak. The bottom just curves a little bit more.
It was just a little fucked up. But no, it has to be the Golden Jones. There is no other option for this episode.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think that you all brought fantastic points and great discussion and a lot of energy to this episode. So it is hard to choose one person who did best. But that is what I'm here to do. And so I have to give this Golden Jones... to Timewall.
Yes!
And here's why. Timewall, I think that you brought an interesting domain that was a little bit more different, but was also, you were able to talk about, you know, quality versus cheese and what makes that entertaining versus not. And I think that you just had a really well-rounded thought process in the whole thing, which when we're talking about cheese is obviously the analytics are the most important thing here. So
definitely.
I just think that you did a great job. I think you all did a great job. I had so much fun. So thank you, but enjoy your Golden Jones.
Yes. And now the heron addicted dolphin is mine.
So that leads us to the end of this episode. Again, I am your host,
Johnny
Laura
Mnemonic
Kramer.
Rapid.
And this week's topic was Johnny Mnemonic and cheesy movies, or just cheese, whatever you prefer.
Gorgonzola.
It was Gouda.
Whichever you prefer.
I can't say whichever you prefer now without thinking that I shouldn't have said that.
But Laura, it's got to be cheesy movies exclusively. It can't just be cheese because we've made it very clear that we don't have any cheese on these nachos. Okay?
You are right.
Outrageous.
All right. Anyway. You can watch Johnny Mnemonic, rent it on iTunes, get it on Google Play, buy it at your local DVD store. Ha ha.
Your local VHS store.
Your local VHS store from 1995. Anyway, our next episode will be hosted by... I don't actually know.
It's Eddie.
Eddie, apparently you're hosting the next.
Yes, I am. The next episode is going to be a brand spinking new episode of the Common Briefing Program, where we're going to talk about, you know, some current... you know, stuff.
Current geek stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be real spicy, guys. Let me tell you right now, it's shaping up to be the spiciest episode of the podcast that's ever been.
Oh.
I mean, that's some, like, serious shade you're throwing right there.
That's a serious accusation, yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Like, what possibly could be going on behind the scenes that's leading it to be such a spicy episode? And I'll tell you right now, the secret ingredient. It's that I just said that right now.
Wait, is the secret ingredient cheese?
I mean, cheese can never be secret. I think. Anyway.
cheese could never be seen.
You just said that like such like a deep way. Like,
I mean, like, cheese can never be secret.
Cheese can never be secret.
Laura with her life lessons over here.
Listen, I am the oldest and therefore the wisest, and so you should know that cheese can never be secret. I know these things. I also cook probably the most of anyone in the podcast.
Laura's been cooking since before we were born.
Oh, Jesus.
Happy birthday, Laura.
Thanks. Happy birthday, Laura. Anyway, so Eddie's episode is going to be airing on December 8th. Feel free to check out the Geek News cycle. See if you can guess what that's going to be about. All the spiciest things.
Does that mean that today is the first day of December?
That does mean today is the first day of December.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Oh.
Bah! Humbug!
That's not what I was expecting. I do feel, as the host, it is my duty to tell you or remind you again that after this cycle, which will be Eddie's episode was the last in this cycle, we will be taking about a month off. So we won't be having our regularly scheduled episodes. We will be putting out content every week, so your newsfeed will still update, but it will be a little bit different. So keep an ear out for that. But thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for listening. Thank you guys so much for participating. If any of you listening would like to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. Hey, if you have any ideas of things that you'd like to hear in our month break, send us an email. We'll take a listen.
We love emails.
We're interested in new ideas. I heard somewhere that we were interested in new ideas. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a review.
A little birdie told her.
It really is a great way for people to find our show. And if you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com, and thank you for listening. Woo!
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Laura Kramer, joined by Taimul Choudhury, Jeff Levitt, and Edward Ryan. This episode is sponsored by Expensive Cordless Props and Cheeseless Nachos. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave us a review. We hope you tune in for our next and last full episode for a while on December 8th, and thank you for listening to this.
We clap at 40, so we have 5 seconds.
Okay. 5 seconds!
Jesus Christ. Okay. I haven't mentally prepared myself.
Okay.
We can do it again if we want.
No, that was fine. That was a joke.
Sometimes I panic when I have to clap, so that's a real thing. It's a real thing that happens.
She goes to a concert and she's just like, "Oh fuck, shit, what no!"
She went to a Guns N' Roses concert once, and they played November Rain, and like the middle of the song comes up, and they like stop playing for like a few seconds, and she was like, and then they started playing, and she was like, "God damn
it!" Oh, no!
That's awkward. Everyone's looking at her like, "You fucking idiot."